Blog Talk Radio.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Here we're watching the Bears versus Colts game. Yeah, I know we should be doing a show, right? But what show? Nah, we're watching this game, and you know, I think we should have permanently on the switchboard. We should have a Super Bowl shuffle. I think we should. Because it was actually going through my head as I were coming on. I'm like, I'm not even listening to, you know, our theme song. I'm sitting there going, we're not here to cause no trouble. We're just here to do the Super Bowl shuffle. I'm actually doing the little body sway that they do. That was some good stuff. Yeah, I have to admit, though, this is a tough game for me because, yeah, look, 22-13, this is just ridiculous. But I'm like, I have to say it's a tough game for me because I'm a Bears fan at heart. You know, grew up Bears. We're from Chicago. So grew up with the Bears. The Bears! And that goes out, rest in peace to our friends. Farley, George Wendt. Well, I mean, they're not all dead, but Farley's dead. But George Wendt, all those guys, Mike Myers, who did the awesome, awesome skit on SNL back in the day for the Bears. That was awesome. And you know what? That was Chicago. Seriously, that was Chicago. I don't know what else to say because, like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm distracted because I don't know what this BS is. I don't know. They're picking people up now. What is going on here? Look at Lovie Smith. You know, he's like, ah, clap.
One of them's like to score a touchdown nowadays.
Freaking Peyton. What's going on here? Anyway, getting back to this. We're doing a show. We're doing a show. But we're going to leave it on and let you guys know if anything happens. You know what's funny? I'm not really a football fan. I'm not really a football fan, but of course, you know, you grow up in your home team, things like that. And, yeah, you know, I am a Bears fan at heart, guys. Walter Peyton, man, the 85 Bears. I don't care what sport it is. I don't care. The Olympics, throw those into. I don't care what it is. To me, the greatest sports team of all time is still the 85 Bears. Why? Because it wasn't just that, you know, they rocked on the field. They have super moves. They have legends of the game. It was just basically, man, I mean, they had that, but they also had passion. They had excitement. They had fun with the game. They had McMahon, who was cocky, you know. I mean, they called him the punky quarterback, you know. I mean, they had William the Fridge. I mean, there were stories. I remember being a kid, and I remember there be stories running around Chicago of how he used to go to Chinese buffets and, like, eat them out, you know. And then, not in that way, guys. Fall back. Come back to the story. There you go. You're rounding the corner. There you go. Welcome back. But that's after the show we talk about that stuff. But, we try to keep it PG for all you cats out there. I don't know when Gore Girl is ever PG, but I guess we're trying something new. I don't know, unless the producers come in and, like, attack us, but we've got stories on them. So I don't think they're going to try it.
They might try to put our rating for TV.
Yeah, I'm like, don't be bringing your Disney crap over here, right? All right? These producers are like, why don't you guys smile into the mic and spread happiness and joy? Shut up! We'll eat you alive! Yes, we make our producers cry daily. But they're like, why do I have to produce your crappy show? You know what? Don't make me. So anyway, back to the important topics that we're discussing. No, but yeah, I got love in my heart for the Bears, man, but I've lived in a bunch of crazy cities, you know, Pittsburgh. I was out in L.A. for a while. And I lived in Indianapolis for just a short stint. God, I mean, I don't know how you Hoosiers do it. Indiana is like the pit of hell. It's like, it really is. Like, you go in and you're sucked in, you're going to die. That's where,
Oklahoma.
That's where, well, actually, Oklahoma, I think they send their things to die to Indiana. I think you prep them in Oklahoma, and then they finish them off in Indiana. Indiana's like where things go to die. It really is. It really is. No offense. I lived out there. There's some great stuff out there, some cool haunts. There's some awesome ghost groups out there. Sean Burst, the ghost man, is from Indiana, and I love that guy. It's actually where he and I met. But, well, obviously, right? I met him in New Jersey. No, I met him in Indiana. No, so there's some good stuff there. But and I have the right to make fun of Indiana because I lived there. That was an interesting time in my life. I was a temporary Hoosier, which I will never admit to people because I'll get shot up here. But I'll have a drive-by at the studio right now. She's a Hoosier? Get in the car! They took her gym! Ed's eating arms, and Ed's watching the game. He's not participating in the show. There's like, he's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care, we're doing some show or something, I don't even know why I come over here and do this. But he doesn't know why he shows up at GG Studios. It's a blur.
He's letting me out of my cage. And
yeah, it's a blur. It's all a blur. Yeah, I don't know. But, so anyway, I became a Colts fan, guys. I know it's a thing. I became a Colts fan because, okay, yes, I love the Bears. They're in my heart from being a kid. I remember the town was blue and orange. I remember the freaking Brown's Chicken commercials for the Bears. I mean, come on, you know, I was there. I got it. It's all good. But being there, watching the Colts play, I developed some sort of love for Peyton and his techniques and, you know, just things about him. I really got to appreciate it. And like I said, I'm not really big into football. You know, I'm a hockey girl. So, you know, I don't watch too much football. But being in Indiana, where basically all they have that's like brings them somewhat out of the pit of hell is the Colts. So, you know, that was like everywhere. It was the Colts this, the Colts that, you know, everything was the Colts them. So I got into the Colts and I really dig it. I dig Peyton Manning. Good stuff. Not to be confused with Walter Payton. I don't know. Some people out there may be totally lost. They're like, football? What is this football you speak of? So I don't know. So this is kind of a conundrum for me sitting here. You know, I like both teams and they're playing each other, but I don't know. That was like an 8-minute story.
Yeah.
But that was the coolest 8-minute story anybody could have ever heard.
Because you got a little history lesson of the Bears.
Exactly, because I said it. That's why. Like, our producers are like, that's 8 minutes of my life, I will get back.
Always know how bad Indiana is. And why
that's always a plus. Like I said, there's good things that came out of Indiana. You know, Dillinger. I mean, yeah, I pick all the crazy things. There's good haunts on there, awesome paranormal groups, some good technology going down there with the paranormal research. And, of course, Sean Burris. He is the reason that Indiana still stands. And he's the only reason that Indiana should continue to live and be part of the union is Sean Burris. So thank you, Sean, for saving the entire state. But, oh, yeah, I think my dog's from there, too, but whatever. Yeah, my dog, we had a whole show about his dogs, but anyway. So, oh, my God, guys, it has been an insane week. We had an awesome show last weekend. What do we have? We had Moso Ghost Hunters on. Awesome show, guys. And we have to update the sites, man. We've been so busy. So many things are going on. We're in the process of hiring people to handle our stuff. But, you know, whatever. We're doing our thing, you know. We're traveling. We're getting things ready. I'm getting ready for Mid-South. What's coming up? Oh, yeah, Halloween. So we've got an action-packed month for you guys, man. October is going to be stellar. I'm not letting the cat slip out of the bag just yet and what we got going on. But all I can say is if you don't tune in to Gore Girl the entire month of October, it's your loss, guys, because it's going to be totally badass, and that's all I'm going to say about it. But, oh, my God, so what's today? What is the official day? I never know what day it is. I know we do the shows on Sundays. It's the 7th, right? September 7th?
Today is September 7th.
I like how you have to check your cell phone. It's not like it's here on the screen or anything. It's not like the producers are telling us. No, we have to check our cell phone because we can't, like, I'm not even, I mean, we have, like, six things around us that tell us what it is, and we're like, wait, let's have dead air and wait for you to get it out. This is how we roll here at GG Studios. We just, and here I am sitting here waiting for him to get his cell phone out. I could have just looked and been like, oh, or what's going on? No.
Maybe she's
going
to produce it to get the buddy phone.
Yeah. Could I have a clock in here, please? I don't know what, okay, never mind. They said that's too much money. So, yeah, that's our budget. You get water. That's all you get. Okay. So, actually, that's what we tell them. Because they're chained up in the studios right now. Oh my God, we have to give a happy birthday shout out to Dario Argento, who's 68 today. I actually have a funny story about this. My girlfriend actually had never seen a Dario Argento film. A lot of my friends have never seen Dario Argento films, so I can't hold it against her. But she's never seen Dario Argento. So I was like, you know what? And she's huge. I mean, she's big into the history of witchcraft. Oh, my God, I just lost my pen. Oh, my God, we have to stop the show. We have to. I can't function. I can't. I somehow, guys, I can't talk unless I have the pen in my hand. I don't know what it is. So anyway, I'm like, I drop it. I can't talk. They took our jabs. They took our pins. I don't know if that would sound the same. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Same
syllable. So anyway, she's big into the witchcraft, big into the whole thing. You know, the positive witchcraft, not talking about the evil stuff, but big into the Salem witch trials, what happened. She herself is sort of, I guess, what you would call a witch. She's a manifester. I call her a manifester. But anyway, so she's big into this. She's never seen Suspiria. Suspiria is like one of the most classic horror films of all time. I mean, it is, some consider it to be Dario Argento's masterpiece. I'd have to say yeah, because that opening scene alone, I mean, the way it's shot, the content of it, the colors, I mean, just the philosophy of that opening sequence in Suspiria is just awesome. It's just amazing. So, I mean, I'd have to say, yeah. And I did this huge review for G&D a while back on Suspiria. You guys might actually be able to check out the forums for it because I had some – God, I haven't even been on the forums for that show in forever. I'm supposed to maintain my forum section. I think it's been like months since I've been on there. Oh my God!
What is this thing that you call a forum?
What is this forum? We have a forum section for the radio show I do, Ghost Man Demon Hunter, which is on right before this, ghostanddemon.com. We have this forum section where I actually was writing my reviews in, like physically, and then I stopped because I'm like, oh my God, that's yeah.
Is that the same forum where we had yellow jello?
Oh, yeah. We started a debate on red jello versus yellow jello. That was awesome. That was the most critical debate of 2007.
It was.
Screw everything else.
That was the only highlight of that year.
And you know what? I don't think it should be about, you know, McCain versus Obama. I think it should be red jello versus yellow jello.
That should be the issue.
It should be.
It should be.
Because I'm all for red jello, and yet is all for yellow jello. And, like, I was talking about the red jello, and I was like, you know what? It's the color of blood. Gigi loves blood. I mean, it goes great with vodka. Do it. Red jello. And then what did you say about the yellow? It's full of sunny goodness. So, I mean, it just went on. It went on. But the possibilities are endless. Then we got people in that were saying that black cherry is the best jello wrestle in. I don't know. But you know what, Bonnie from Ghostly Talk? You and I still have our jello wrestling match that we need to do. So let's get on this, girl, all right? anyway, big shout-out to Bonnie. Everybody here at the GG Studios is with her and her family during this time. So I hope everything's cool, girl. And if you need anything, give the Gore Girl Studios a call. Anyway, so she's watching Suspiria, right? I'm like, what am I talking about? I'm like, oh, my God, the Bears. We're doing a show. The Bears. So everyone's like, oh, my God, GG's especially, like, rambled tonight. Rambled, it's all the same. Oh, look, Peyton, go! Oh, God! Peyton's out! I'm sorry, guys. We're going to be the commentators. We should be the commentators for this day.
We should.
So, they're going to take the TV out of here. They're going to tell us, you guys are not getting TV in the studios anymore because this is bad. This is wrong. I mean, we requested it. It was in our contract, actually. So I don't think they can take it out. Exactly. I don't think they can take it. But, yeah, they're shaking their heads like, yeah, it's gone tomorrow. We'll be here next week. All we have is a chair. But how are we going to do the show? Morse code.
We don't even have a chair.
They'll be like, Morse code. Smoke signals. Do it now. So, anyway, okay, I show her Suspiria. And I actually showed my sister Suspiria a long time ago because my sister was trying to be cultured on horror movies or some jam. I don't even know. She had some crusade she was doing. So I showed her Suspiria because I was like, dude, you got to check this out. Dario Argento, he was a main mover and shaker in the giallo film movement. I mean, that's one of my personal favorite film movements of all time, actually. So I showed her Suspiria. My sister wasn't into it because, you know, it's a slow pace. You really have to get into it. It's one of those thinking pictures. It's a little off. It's a little helter-skelter from time to time. So I showed this to my girlfriend, who's kind of, you know, she digs some stuff, and then some stuff I think she'd be totally into. She's like, ah, it was boring. Why are you showing that to me? I'm like, okay. Well, don't you suck, but all right. So I showed her Suspiria. And she was just riveted, absolutely sat there, eyes glued to the screen. So it made me excited, you know, because I get excited when people I show movies to that I'm trying to give a good recommendation. They're like excited. I'm like, yeah, yeah, I matched you up. It's like eHarmony. You're matching a movie up to a person, you know. You got to look into it. Do they like long walks on the beach? You know, what kind of strawberry shortcake? You know, I mean, you know, you got to match it all up. So I was all happy. So she totally digged it. But and now she appreciates the art and genius that is Dario Argento. So good times. But I don't know, guys. I'm going to start a debate out there. I'm actually more of a Fulci fan. So between the two big Italian directors, I have to say I'm more into Fulci. I'm going to get comments now. People are going to be like, what? What? Yeah, bring it. All right, that's all I got to say. I did hear something, all right, and I have to thank my buddies at Dark Destinations for this. They were on G&D a while back, and I love these guys because they send me all sorts of tidbits and craziness. And they, you know, I can't remember every day. You know, I'm so busy running around doing crazy stuff and basically bashing my helmet into a wall. But they keep me up to date. Like, dude, remember this day in history? Hello, come on, Gigi. So I'm like, oh yeah, let me get out of my cocaine stupor and help, you know, read this. But anyway, they told me about this. I thought this was hysterical. I had to share this with you. I didn't actually know this happened. Like, I never heard of this. I don't know. This is news to me, so I'm going to share it with you guys because it might be news to you. There was this town of Babylon up by Oak Beach, New York, okay? And this father and son were fishing, and all of a sudden the son was started freaking out because he discovered gravestones protruding out of the water. I mean, this is a bay, this is an ocean. This is a bay, you know? There's gravestones poking out of the water, and he's like, oh, my God, Dad. This is a little kid. She's freaking out. And the dad, of course, goes right to the Long Island TV station, and they decide to get to the bottom of it. Why are there a bunch of graves in the water? I mean, personally, I do that. I go to the beach. I bring a couple gravestones with me.
Yeah, of course.
Of course, you know. I mean, come on. I mean, I can't remember if I was there, but I'm sorry if I left those. You can return those to me. I'll give you the address. But anyway, they found out that the stones actually acted as jetties, helping prevent the erosion of the beach, which I thought was cool because, I mean, they do – I don't think they do that in Chicago to Lake Michigan. I can't remember. But, you know, they throw the stones in, and it helps to, you know, stop the erosion of the beach. And, you know, being that where it's at and everything, that's a pretty freaking good idea. So, I mean, I have to hand it to them. But these aren't actual, like, gravestones from dead people. These are, like, mistakes. So this is where I thought it was great. Because, you know, you wonder, you're watching these people. Everybody makes mistakes, right? These gravestone people can't be, like, perfect every time. So I'm thinking to myself, I did think this a while back, you know, probably when I was a kid. I was like, what happens to the mistakes? Like, somebody gets their name misspelled, you know, something's wrong, something's crooked. What do they do with the stone? I mean, it's not like they take it home and put it in their living room. I mean, that's what I would do, but people aren't like me. So apparently they throw them in the ocean. So I think my next summer vacation is going to be this beach, and I'm going to wade out and be trapped upon the gravestones. I think that's good family vacation. So good time.
Go out there and take one home with me.
Exactly. Yeah, it's out there lugging it. I don't know what to do. It's a little heavy.
So
I'll be laughing because you'll be drowning in the ocean. I'll be like, ah, should I save them? Nah,
yeah.
Not really. So, good times. Oh, my God. I got to tell you guys about this. I always try to cover, bring you guys some good news about the horror industry, things like that. And I'm sorry. I'm just laughing at this game. I don't. Let's not even do a show. Let's just end it. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not that into football, all right? I'm just joshing you. So, anyway, I was talking to my sister about this because she knows I always get the scoop on horror movies, and she likes me to fill her in on what's going on. So I have to share it with you guys. I always bring in the stuff about the remakes and things like that. We are currently in the trend for remakes, all right, guys? I was trying to explain this to somebody earlier, and The horror industry goes through trends. I mean, everybody can see it. It's just, it's a fact. It's like yin and yang. This is what happens, all right? You go through trends. We have the slasher trend. We have the vampire trend. We have a psychological horror trend. We had the, you know, alien trend. I mean, whatever trend you want. There's special names for them. There's generic names for them. We went through the trend of Asian films that we felt somehow needed to be remade in America, but you're seeing an end to that. You won't see any more of those, trust me. If you do, it'll be few and far between because we're getting out of that trend. That was the trend of the last couple of years in the horror community. And a new trend started simultaneously while that one was going on. I wasn't sure which one would end and which one would keep going, but apparently I have my answer. The remake trend, yeah, that's the trend we're in right now, and it is going full on, baby. We have an entire smorgasbord of remakes are coming. You thought the 75,000 remakes we had over the last, like, 4 years were enough? No, not at all. Not at all. We've got about a gazillion more, okay? I mean, you're talking about the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, which is going to be kind of like Rob Zombie's Halloween. It's going to be like prequel slash remake. Robert Englund is signed on for that. I have to tell everybody out there, Robert Englund is there. He's going to delve more into that character, I guess. Basically, he owns that character. Come on. Nobody else can do it. But, well, Nightmare on Elm Street is going to be remade. Then, God, there was just so many. They were talking about another alien movie. They were talking, there's just rumors flying everywhere. They are eating it up because, you know, the newest generation of moviegoers, the younger generation, are flocking to see these remakes. Because I actually found out, you know, I was doing kind of a study on it, and a lot of these younger moviegoers don't know that these remakes were actually based, they were original movies. You know, they think the remakes are the movie. They don't realize there was another movie. So, of course, this remake trend, it's making fat cash for the Hollywood, you know, big cats. So they're going to keep feeding into it. So we've got so many. There's so many talks about things going on. I got the newest slate of remakes coming in. And I hate to say it, guys, but this trend isn't going to end anytime soon. It's not going to end until the numbers stop coming in the way that they are. But we've got this whole slew of things, and I just found out about a couple more. Of course, everybody knows about the Friday the 13th remake. I actually saw the 2 minutes of it. They aired in New York. Insanity, right? Well, of course, I told you guys last time about the Children of the Corn remake. So they got somebody, and rumor has it that Daniel Newman is being cast in the role of Malachi, which, of course, has been was played by my all-time fave Courtney Gaines in that role. Come on, seriously. So Daniel Newman is going to be Malachi in the remake of Children of the Corn. Really? I saw a picture of this guy. I'm familiar with his Cirque du Freak stuff. Really? Malachi? Come on now. And, of course, why are you remaking Children of the Corn? I mean, it's not really a movie that – well, why does any movie get remade, really? But, seriously, Children of the Corn? Come on. So, actually, this one's going to straight to Sci-Fi Channel, guys. It's a made-for-TV remake, so you can catch that on Sci-Fi Channel when it comes out. I don't know why you would, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure I'll have to watch it and review it so that I could save you guys the trouble of having to watch that. Of course, there's going to be a Child's Play remake. Don Mancini, who wrote the original one, came up with the story, the concept, is actually writing and directing this one, guys. So he's going to be helming the Child's Play remake bandwagon, I guess. But everyone's asking me, what's different? What's going to be different about Child's Play? Really? Chucky, what's different? Apparently, all of the details, all the murders are going to be different, guys. And there's going to be new sets, new pieces, new props. They're actually going to redesign Chucky himself. So I don't know. I didn't see any plans. I heard rumors about stuff that they're doing to him. They're redesigning him. Brad Dourif will remain the voice of Chucky. And I thought this was a cool thing. He's going to get more screen time as Charles Lee Ray. So Brad Dourif's back. He's still doing the voice. Don Mancini himself said, who the hell else would do the voice? It's Brad Dourif or bust, you know? So kind of like the Robert Englund. You know, I mean, it's just, there's certain people, it's that or bust, you know, that they're, it's make or break. So he's back, but he's also doing more Charles Lee Ray. And apparently Charles Lee Ray is like off the charts this time. Like he gets to do some crazy stuff. I don't know. I'm hearing a bunch of rumors. Everybody's excited. Let's see what happens, guys. they also said, because a couple people have asked me, why are they making this remake? GG, why are they remaking Child's Play? What's up with this? Well, Don Mancini, they were talking about they were supposed to make a sequel to Seed of Chucky. And they said, well, we want this to be scary again, because now we got into campy, we got into John Waters territory. Now let's bring it back to the core. Let's bring it back to the original. Let's bring it back to when it was actually kind of scary. So they decided that in order to do that, there's no way they could do it from this point. They're going to reboot the series. So that's why we're getting a remake, guys. So I don't know. I'm actually interested to see this one because I love Brad Dourif. He's awesome. Charles Lee Ray coming back. We might actually get to see him be the Lakeshore Strangler. We might actually get to see him kill somebody. I mean, that would be cool. I'm down. So I don't know. Let's see what happens. Of course, I have to mention this. I know all you guys could care less about this right now, but they're actually... they gave the green light on this. They don't have a script yet. They're working on it. But the concept is greenlit, and the studio's backing it. Ghostbusters 3. I'm waiting for the applause. As Yed cracks his head in the table. But, no, I love the first two Ghostbusters. They're funny, all right? They're kitschy. They're funny. They're campy. I used to own the toys, you know, the little Ecto-1 car. I mean, that was awesome. Yes, I watched the TV series. You know, I had the books. I had the coloring books. I was all crazy about Ghostbusters. But I think I even have a shirt. I don't know. So, anyway. Ghostbusters 3, guys. They're trying to get the script done. This is definitely going to happen, whether we want it to or not. They're trying to get the originals back. They're trying to get Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, all this. But they're concerned about this sort of a salary cap kind of thing. It's kind of like sports, I guess. They're kind of concerned as to how much revenue these guys are going to want, how much of a take of this production they're going to want. So... talk's been that if they can't negotiate something with the four original cast members, they're going to get all new four four cast members for Ghostbusters. And they're tossing around names like Steve Carell, Seth Rogen, please God no. But these are names they're tossing out. How could you do that? First of all, you're making Ghostbusters 3. You're already riding a thin line. The only reason people will go and pack in the theater seats is because it'd be the original guys. So you're going to make Ghostbusters 3 knowing that the only way you're going to make any money at all is if you put the original people in it. But now you might not put the original people in it. So you expect me to go see Ghostbusters 3 with no Bill Murray, no Dan Aykroyd, no Reitman, no Hudson. You expect me to go see it with Seth Rogen. And you probably expect me to buy some cheesy story. I'm sure it's going to be something insane. They're going to try to modernize it. They're going to try to put a new modern spin on it. They're going to try to have blatantly stupid comedy in there when actually Ghostbusters had kitschy comedy. You're going to expect me to go see Ghostbusters 3 without the original cast members and without kitschy comedy. Are you insane? Really? Really? Does it look like I would go see this? Does it say ass on my head? No, it does not. It says GG. I am not going to see this unless you bring the four back. That's all I'm saying. Look at this. I'm all hot now. I'm all hot. Where is the water? I swear to God, I'm gonna kill somebody. No, I was not angered before I heard this. When I heard the news, I was kind of like, oh, that'd be kind of cool, kind of goofy. You go search three. No, I'm angry now. I'm angry. If you bring me those people, I can't handle it. I can't handle it, guys. Really? Steve Carell? Really? Go to Get Smart, all right? Go do Get Smart 2 or some jazz. Stay away from Ghostbusters. This isn't your thing, all right? Seth Rogen, please. I agree with my friend. He's funny in, like, like a half of a movie, okay? No, please. I don't think so. I can't handle it. I'm shaking. I can't handle it. I can handle it. And what's funny is people would have expected me to blow up on the remake thing. No, people. I've done that a million times. I've blown up on this a million times to different people. I can handle the remake thing now because I basically have to choke on it. But, no, I refuse. I will pick it. That's it. I'm picketing Ghostbusters 3. I don't care. That's it. Get me some pen, paper. I don't know. I'm going to the corners. I'm hitting the streets, people. That's it. It's done.
Officially.
That's it. I'm done. Ghostbusters 3, no. I don't support that. Unless you get the original cast members. Then I'll support it. But everyone's like, oh, my God. Don't mention Ghostbusters 3 to GG. Just playing it. No, I'm serious. So anyway, we are going to hit commercial break, guys. And as soon as we come back from commercial break, I've got something really cool to talk about. So it's going to take up probably the last half of the show. But you know what? You guys don't care because you're having fun. We're all having a good time. We're chewing on some severed limbs. It's all good. You know, we're bashing Ghostbusters 3. We're talking, I don't even know what we talked about the first half hour of the show. I really don't. But we're going to talk more about stuff. And you're going to like it because it's stuff. Ah, whatever, go to commercial.
And now a word from our sponsors.
There is just one Schlitz. Yeah, yeah, nothing else comes near. When you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. If you like it light with a big taste too, there's only one brew that will do when you're out of Schlitz. You're out of beer. Real gusto in the great light beer Schlitz.
Oh my God, the travesty. Well, actually, I guess since I'm going for both teams, the Bears won. So there you go. Congrats. I don't know. I dislike Urlacher a lot.
Yeah, I don't think he's a good player.
Well, see, my thing is, he's an ass. He is an ass. I mean, it's not like 85 Bears where McMahon was an ass, but he was fun. You liked him. He gave energy. No, this guy's just an ass. He's just pompous, and I don't like him, man. So because I don't like Urlacher, it puts the Bears just lower to me. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. But anyway, we got some good stuff to talk about. What I did tonight on G&D, guys, was I was talking about some really good friends of my buddies, Sean and Nate, are the Booth brothers, the filmmaking guys in The Paranormal. Everybody knows them. They've done documentaries. They did Spooked about Waverly Hills. They did Children of the Grave. Keith Age is affiliated with them. They get some good stuff going on from time to time. And I think, if I recall what Nate said this evening, that they're shooting another one, or they're in the middle of it, or whatever. But the Booth brothers shoot a lot of really cool paranormal things. They've done a couple non-documentary-style things, which one of them being Death Tunnel. I actually talked about it on the show tonight. That was actually sort of my review for the show, was because, I don't know, I'm probably the last person in the galaxy to have seen it, but I was so busy with all the other horror movies, all the other stuff going on. You know what? I'm going to shut this off now because I don't want to see Urlacher, and it's making me angry. So so I'm probably the only one in the galaxy that hasn't seen it, right? And I decided to go ahead, give it a try. The Booth brothers convinced me that they're decent filmmakers, so props to them. Thank you, guys. I love Death Tunnel, all right? And there's a reason I love Death Tunnel. I didn't love it for the story about five college girls that have to survive the night on five different floors of an abandoned hospital. No, the story was a little, you know, cliched as usual. And having them related to people that used to work in the hospital, that was very reminiscent of House on Haunted Hill and a couple of the remakes that we've seen in the last 7 or 8 years. So no, I wasn't digging that. The reason that I am about to go out and buy Death Tunnel is because it's based on Waverly Hills, guys. And I have to talk about it. This is what we're talking about for the next 26 minutes, all right? And if you don't like it, I don't care, all right? You're going to like it. I'm going to make you like it. You're going to take it, you're going to like it, and if you're lucky, I'll give you Vaseline with it. So anyway.
Maybe a wraparound.
Maybe. So, no, seriously, Waverly Hills, guys. The Booth brothers did an awesome job of taking the original ghost stories, original rumors, and actually portraying them in the movie, weaving them into their own story, making it fiction and nonfiction at the same time. It was awesome. They made Waverly Hills the star of the movie. And so many ghost hunters and filmmakers and people that are trying to, you know, combine both worlds of film and paranormal, so many times out of the gate, they have it shot at a really cool abandoned place with a really cool history, and they disregard everything about it. They just use it as a location, and they just use it to put it on the box art so that people will pick their movie up. But they don't do anything else with it. This guy's, they took everything about Waverly. They took the history. They took the location. They took the ghost stories. They took even the rumored ghost stories and threw them in there and made it a part of the movie. And, I mean, Waverly Hills really is the star. So, I mean, that totally blew me away because my favorite place, and I don't know how many people know about this, because if you go to the conventions If you talk to me one-on-one, if you've seen some of my lectures I do at conventions, I don't even know if I call them lectures. I call them entertainment segments. If you see some of my entertainment segments at conventions, you'll hear me talk about Waverly Hills. You'll hear me talk about what happened to me at Waverly Hills. But the majority of you don't know because I don't usually talk about it on the show. You know, we're talking about other things. We're getting crazy. We got guest signs, all sorts of insanity. But Waverly Hills is absolutely, hands down, one of my absolute favorite places in the world as far as paranormal activity. It, just the history. It, like I said, it's not just the ghosts. It's the history. It's everything about it. It's the surrounding area. It's the architecture. It's just, I mean, you know, the aftermath. It's what happens now. I mean, it's personal experiences, everything just culminated for me into this being one of my most favorite places. So everything about Waverly Hills, I'm just like, yeah, I'm down. It's good stuff, right? With good reason, because if you've been to Waverly Hills or you're going to go to Waverly Hills, you will not disagree that that's not a cool place. You won't. Even if you don't have things happening to you or a bunch of experiences, or you kind of leave empty-handed in a way, which I don't know how you could because you've got the privilege of going to Waverly Hills. But even if that happens, man, it's a cool place. It is so just badass to go to. But I got to tell you about Waverly Hills. I mean, we're gonna talk about it because I saw Death Tunnel. I was all psyched. You know, I mean, one of the producers actually watched it with me. We were just so psyched about it. I was digging it. I was digging the Booth Brothers. I was just absolutely, it was like I was right back in Waverly, man. It was awesome. Good time. So this is the portion of the show because, like, you know, we had agreed that the GG hour is supposed to be where you're sitting on the couch, drinking some beer, talking about horror movies and paranormal and ghost hunting. So this is that portion of the show where I'm really going to nail it home to you guys, all right? So saddle up for story time, kids, okay?
Yay, story time with Gigi.
Let's all gather around the fire and listen to Gigi talk about Waverly Hills. Yay! So, Waverly Hills, all right? The history is interesting, guys. I'm not going to go too far back because, you know, whatever. But let's just say it originally started out as like a one-room schoolhouse for the mayor's daughters, all right? So this is going back. It got its name from the teacher, stuff like this. All right, construction actually began on Waverly Hills as we know it because it was a small hospital for only about 40, 50 people back in the day. They decided they needed, you know, we're getting more and more. Tuberculosis is increasing. They called it, you know, the White Plague. So this was spreading rampantly throughout the U.S., there's no cure. They didn't know what to do at the time, no state-of-the-art stuff, so they started building sanatoriums everywhere. So Waverly Hills became, you know, here's 40 or 50 people. No, we need to put a lot more people in your sanatorium. So they decided to build bigger and better. So they go ahead, and in March of 1924, they began construction on Waverly Hills, as we know it today. It officially opened October 17, 1926, for all the patients at Waverly Hills, all the TB patients. All right, my God, this is all I'm going to say, all right? This is how this fairy tale, this nightmare, whichever one you want to call it, began, all right? Here's Waverly Hills. It's situated on top of a hill, all right? This is, all sanatoriums were supposed to be high on a hill with a pleasant surrounding to sort of provide relaxation and a serene setting for the patients to heal in. So here, it's put on this hill, okay? Well, now you're figuring, this is back in the 20s, this is back in the 30s, okay? I mean, we didn't have all this great stuff to get us up a steep hill in wintertime. So what people, they call it the Death Tunnel, hence the name of the Booth Brothers movie. But there's a tunnel dug into the side of the mountain, and it's 500 feet long. It starts, well, I just said 500 feet long. Like, it starts, no, not at all. It's pitch black in there because obviously there's no electric, but no more electric. They're trying to restore it. But it's 500 feet down. On one side is stairs that go all the way down. And on the other side is sort of like just a slick surface that looks like a slide. Used to be kind of like a tram system. It would have the two little rails set up kind of like a coal mine thing. And there would be like a motorized winch and gurney that would like move up and down. Well, they used to bring supplies up and down that. That was like the thing, you know, you couldn't get the trucks up in winter. So you used to bring supplies up and down that way. It also used to be the employees, when it was winter time to stay warm, they'd come, you know, up and down to the hospital through the tunnel. All right. It wasn't originally used for the, you know, disturbing purpose that it was until TB reached its height. When tuberculosis sprung out of control, it, you know, Louisville, Kentucky at the time had the highest death rate for TB. So that's why they built Waverly Hills as state-of-the-art as it was. And it was the most state-of-the-art hospital in the country because it had the best staff. It had the best doctors and nurses from around the world. So at the time, Waverly Hills was like the creme de la creme. It's like you have TB, where do you go? You go to Waverly Hills or you go to some other crappy sanatorium. That's pretty much what it boiled down to back in the day. I mean, I think we even, it was just insane. That's how, you know, public this was. And, you know, there was public service announcements. We actually have one up on the Gore Girl show MySpace. It's an actual public service announcement from like 1931. So, I mean, this was everywhere. If you wanted to get cured, your best chance was at Waverly Hills. Actually, it wasn't. So many people there died there, over 63,000 people. So, I mean, the hospital was in operation from 1926 to 1961. So over 63,000 people had croaked. And, I mean, their morgue only held 1 to 3 people. And, I mean, really, why, if you have a hospital, you build this huge hospital, why would your morgue only hold 3 people? Yeah, really. I'm like, would you need a bigger cafeteria? Seriously? I would build a big morgue, okay? I mean, this was, maybe throw a couple fridges in there, have them tossed in the freezer. I don't know. Whatever you want to do. Maybe put them in Ziploc baggies, label them, hang them on the shelf. Whatever you need to do, but make yourself some space, all right? Because you're going to have some corpses piling up.
Maybe they didn't think people
were dying. It was apparent people were dying. So this is what happened, right? And, you know, you had the tunnel. Well, what ended up happening is since they're dropping off at such a high rate at the height of the white plague happening, they decided to turn the supply tunnel into sort of what people refer to it now as a body chute. They would take the bodies down on the winch into down to the ground where there would be carts waiting for them. You know, they'd go by train or whatever. They'd get put in little wooden coffins and basically almost mailed to their families. So here they are. They get spread out by train across the country to wherever their families are at. So basically it's like, here's a calling card. Oh, yeah, it's your dead aunt in a box. You know, unfortunately, back in the day, they didn't have as much technology as we had or such sophisticated techniques or things like that, even though I don't believe that a lot of stuff we do is sophisticated. But they didn't have a lot of things that we have today, so they couldn't really tell sometimes if somebody was actually dead. And I hate to say it, but a lot of people that took that trip down that chute weren't actually dead. So can you imagine that? That you're going down that chute on that gurney, and, like, you're alive in some way, shape, maybe some tiny molecule, you're alive. And that's the last thing you see. If you weren't dead by the time you hit the bottom of that chute, you were sure as hell dead when you got to your family in your little wooden box. So in whatever, in Boca Raton or wherever the heck you came from. So, I mean, that's just a little foreshadowing of how frightening it was there, how, you know, just crazy this epidemic was. I mean, they were dropping off at 1 an hour. That's insane. So, and I believe at the time it was Dr. Miller, the man didn't go to school for me to call him Doc or Miller. Or he didn't go to school for me to call him Miller. He didn't go to school for me to call him Mr. So Dr. Miller was the head of Waverly at the time that the epidemic was at its height. So I have to give him credit. He tried to do a lot of things, a lot of treatment for the patients. They tried to keep morale high there. And there are stories, people say, oh, yeah, it was great, you know, they had activities and stuff, but really it wasn't. They had these solarium porches on the second and third floor. And what it was, well, actually it was mostly on the second floor. What it was that they'd roll the beds out onto these porches. They had no windows, no glass. They were just these wide open porches that were basically kind of screened in because they thought that fresh air would carry the bacteria out. You know, you got all these people coughing, you know, wheezing all over the place. So they figured fresh air, a constant supply of fresh air running through the hospital would clear out the bacteria. So they tried that, and then they thought that, heliotherapy was a big thing that they were trying in order to treat TB. They figured that the sun's rays would somehow cause the bacteria and the, you know, basically the crud that tuberculosis starts on. It thought that it would kill it or somehow slow it, somehow heal it. So they tried to keep the patients in the sun all the time. They took the kids out on fusilarium on the fifth floor, you know, let them play out in the sun for a while, hoping they'd get hot enough to burn off some of the bacteria. So, I mean, they were trying everything, guys. They did lobectomies where they cut off diseased parts of the lung. I mean, they did things where, you know, they just, I don't know about this, all right? I mean, there's a lot of things that happen, and I'm not really sure that this would be one of them that I would want to happen. But they actually had, well, obviously, pneumothorax was a technique where they deflated a portion of your lung so it could heal. All right, that's not as bad. There was a technique, guys, where they actually removed your rib cage, parts of your rib cage, to get to you, to deflate it, to perform the lobectomy, whatever it was they were doing, or, you know, things like that. That's what they did. They would remove 3 to 4 ribs at a time, and they would remove as many as, like, 7 to 8 ribs per person. So you're missing, like, half your rib cage. I mean, this is just crazy. I mean, they were so frantic. They were trying to figure out what to do with, you know, this disease. It was running rampant, guys. So, you know, they're trying all these experimental procedures, which is also, I don't know. I mean, we weren't really there. There's documentation, but really how far can we say that we know how legit some of this is? But I don't know. They said there's a lot of experimental surgery that went on. Can you blame them? They have the biggest state-of-the-art hospital at the time. Tuberculosis is a rampant disease, killing thousands of people all across the country. Families were torn apart. I mean, it was just, this is insane. People are coming in from all over the world trying to cure this. Nothing. Treatment after treatment. They're trying anything, guys. Basically, it was a desperate time. So experimental procedures, you know. God knows what some of the things they did that we don't know about. I don't know. And, I mean, can you blame them? It's not that they were doing it out of evil. They were doing it to try to genuinely help people. And I was talking about the staff. The staff had to stay and live at the hospital because tuberculosis is an airborne illness, and they couldn't risk exposure to the general public. So they tried to contain it. So the nurses and doctors had to basically live at Waverly Hills. They could leave once in a while, but really there was dorms there. So these people were pretty dedicated. You got there, you lived there. That was it. And a lot of them died. A lot of them contracted TB themselves. So I don't know. They were risking their own lives for the safety of others, I guess. But all these treatments they tried, guys, I mean, you know, with the lungs and putting the kids out there. And I mean, just so many crazy things happened. I mean, think about it. 63,000 people died. Over that, actually. I mean, the people are speculating that it's well over that. But these solarium porches that they had, they'd push the beds out there, right? Well, can you imagine being one of those people in those beds? I mean, here you are. They were trying to make it peaceful, serene, calm. They were trying to keep you calm, trying to keep your mind occupied to try to heal you of TB. They're trying to keep your morale high. But think of what that did to you, being on that porch in that bed, right? And, I mean, you're just coughing and you feel like crap, and you feel it spreading through your body. And imagine looking out, you see a blue sky, you see these green trees, you may see nurses walking to and fro in the grounds. I mean, think about how your morale is just going to dip. Because seriously, you know you're not leaving there. I mean, a lot of people didn't. So can you imagine laying there going, here, they show me this and I'm going to die. They're like taunting me with something I'll never have again. I'm never going to see this again. I'm never going to see what's out there, see the world, you know. And some people go, well, maybe that boosted them to try harder. It was a desperate time, guys. I doubt it did much to boost morale to see things that you're no longer going to be a part of. But, you know, I mean, who's to say? They tried their best to keep them. They gave them crafts and things to do. And, you know, they taught them to sew, to make brooms, to make bedspreads. So they would take that to the Kentucky State Fair and, you know, sell it to help, you know, offset the cost of operation. I mean, it was insane. So anyway, it closed down in 61 because they came up with a cure for tuberculosis. They quarantined the hospital. They restored it. They opened it back up that next year as basically an elderly home. That ran from 62 to about 80. That got shut down by the state because apparently they were treating their patients very well. Apparently, there were some things going on, and they were mistreating some of the elderly. I don't know what happened. Apparently, Yed was there. There were 70-year-old men. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, guys, now we get to the good part. All right, here's the history of it. I mean, that's awesome. I'm totally a fan of buildings. I'm totally a fan of just the old abandoned asylums, just pieces of our history that will never change, you know, just morbid gothic pieces of our history, darkness, you know, the dark undertow of our society, you know, things that creep up and down our spine. So here you go. You got this, and especially when it has such a rich history attached to it. So Waverly Hills is perfect for that, right up my alley. Now the ghost tales, all right? Obviously, shadow people. They say the third floor is inhabited by shadow people. They say that apparently, you know, because of the kids that were there, if you put a red ball on the floor and you roll it, the kids will basically play catch with you or play with you. God, the stories are limitless. On the fifth floor was a nurse's station, and that's where basically room 502 is. It was like a nurse's locker room. They said that a nurse was there back in the day, and that she got pregnant by one of the doctors. So apparently she had an abortion, because, I mean, back in the day, I mean, this doctor was married. This was basically like the Scarlet A, guys. She was, you know, basically outcast. She would have been, you know, completely miserable. Her child would basically, you know, be thrown out almost to the wolves. I mean, this was completely unacceptable in society at the time. So she didn't know what to do. She absolutely didn't know what to do. She ended up having an abortion, hated herself for it, was so distraught. And supposedly the story goes that she ended up either hanging herself or throwing herself off the fifth floor. I don't know. Stories are different. There's a story of if it wasn't her, another nurse that did something similar. I mean, there's so many stories about what happened. Those cannot be confirmed nor denied. You have people that actually are still alive that worked at Waverly, you know, in the 30s or 40s that actually have said, well, this didn't happen. This did happen. I don't know about this. I don't know about that. So nothing can really be confirmed on this, guys. There was one employee, which I thought was interesting about the death tunnel. Okay, here you got all these employees like affected by this. They've got TB, they got this, they got that. One guy, and actually the owner, Tina, who owns Waverly right now, her and her husband, Charles, great guys, good stuff. I'm so glad they're restoring Waverly Hills. Anyway, she told me this. They had somebody that actually used to work there that they got this story from. He worked in operating the death tunnel, and he operated the pulley system. Well, apparently what had happened was he was actually a baseball player. He was a pitcher, and he was so good, and he was going to the pros. Well, something had happened where he needed cash for something, or his family needed something, or somehow they needed financial bailment. So he went to work there. He was working there, and he was waiting for the call from the big leagues that he got in. So he was working at Waverly Hills. I think they said it was the day before or the week before he got the call that, dude, you're going to play for the Cleveland Indians or whatever team it was. It was some big team back then. You know, we want you to pitch for us. He lost his hand in the wench system, and it was the hand that he pitched with. Mm. Yeah, I mean, think about this, guys. And that's a true story straight from one of the employees that was there. And, I mean, well, unless he's crazy. I don't know. But, I mean, how many people know that? That's not part of the history. That's a personal story, you know. And, I mean, wow. I mean, it's not as infamous as the 502 story that every, you know, kid goes running to Waverly to try to break in and see the lady, you know, hanging from the ceiling. No, but, man, I mean, just think about how much is attached to this building, how much energy is attached to this building, how much paranormal is attached. So apparently people say they see the nurse. People say they hear gurney wheels going down the hallway. People say that, you know, they can hear talking. There's also, because they had the big cafeteria, one of the doctors or the staff doctors, I don't remember which one it was, but they loved the certain syrup they had for the pancakes. They loved pancakes. They loved syrup for breakfast. So they would make that a lot, you know, because the staff liked it, you know, the guests, you know, the patients liked it. Well, I guess I would call them guests, but I don't know at that point if they are guests. So they liked it. They're like, to this day, people say that they can smell syrup and pancake and bacon stuff running through the hospital, and obviously it's abandoned. You know, the owners are working on restoring it. I mean, there's no electricity in this place. It's pitch black. There's I didn't see, like, you know, any glass. There's nothing on the floor. They cleaned it up. I mean, this is basically not a place that you're going to cook in yet. It's abandoned, and you're smelling pancake and syrup. I mean, the nearest house is, like, miles down the road. Come on, guys, you know? So, I mean, stuff like that. There's, you know, footsteps, phantom voices. People have seen apparitions there. A couple of people have said they've seen full-bodied apparitions there. People have left screaming the hospital. People have felt like they've been touched, pushed, breathed on, hissed at. God, there's temperature drops. There's, you know, people that go there to ghost hunt. There's K2 responses. There's EVP. There's swirls in pictures. There's swirls in video. There's, you know, blurs. There's blobs. There's blips. There's, I don't know, strawberry jam. I don't know. There's everything there. Waverly Hills is like the gamut of paranormal activity. But can you blame it? You got over 63,000 people that died, that basically suffered there. You had experimental surgeries. You had the staff that contracted TB. You had freaking, like, the guy who told you that lost his hand. I mean, he's not dead, but think of all that crap that just accumulates over time. Oh, my God. Then, of course, we're just factoring in the tuberculosis part. But what about the elderly portion? I mean, and they were mistreated. The state shut them down. I mean, oh, my God, you're adding things on, people. This is like karmic bruises are just in Waverly. They just all over Waverly. I mean, I had the I'm going to say it, guys. I mean, it's sad what happened there, and I feel so much empathy for that place. It's heart-wrenching, but I had a blast at Waverly. That was the best freaking time I ever had ghost hunting. Oh, my God. I was in a heyday. I was in a haze. That was awesome, guys. That was freaking awesome. I mean, I had so many things happen to me. Of course, I got EVP, K2, all the stuff, but I actually had, and we only have 3 minutes, so I'm going to see how well I can tell the story in 3 minutes. All right, we were on the third floor. Okay, Rosemary Ann Guiley, everybody knows her. She's a famous author in the paranormal. We were up there. There's a small group of us. These floors are huge. You could literally get lost in these floors. My best friend, this guy that's doing EVP, and myself go to one end of the hallway. We had seen a shadow person. Our entire group had seen a shadow person over there earlier. All right. We decide to go back over to that section. Everybody else is way across the other side of the hospital at the other end of this hall. It takes a long time to get from one end of the hall to the other, okay? So we're at the way at the other end, right, away from everybody else. We're going to do EVP. So we're over there doing EVP. We're about 5 feet from the wall at the end of the hospital, and they're about to do EVP. They're standing 5 feet away from me. I stop. All of a sudden, I have chills down my spine. The hair on the back of my neck stands up, and I have kind of long hair. So all of a sudden, somebody, like, moves my hair off of my neck. I could feel the hot breath all on my cheek, on the side of my neck, on my earlobe. And all of a sudden, they go, "Hey, well, you know, I'd like to say that I had a ghost hunting response, that I turned around and went, yeah, what are you made of? What's going on? Can you see me? Can you hear me? Oh, my God, can you touch this? Oh, my God, is it Ghostbusters 3 up in here? You know, I'd like to say, you know, I was getting an interview with the ghost. I was booking him on the show. It was all good. No. I jumped 15 feet in the air, slammed around, and, like, slammed my back into the wall as there's, like, single tears running down my face. Because you don't expect that. You know, you're ghost hunting. You're, like, completely in a zone. It's like somebody, like, you're in a zone, somebody comes out and, like, smacks you in the face. You're not expecting it. You're going to be like, holy crap, you know. I hit a holy crap moment. So my friend comes over. As soon as I jumped, my friends turn around, and they go, oh, my God, there's a shadow person running away from you down the hallway. So I'm, like, a little bit trembly, and I'm like, yeah, probably the a-hole that just said, hey, my ear. Yeah, they're like, let's go do this. I'm like, give me a minute, all right? Let me collect myself here on the floor. Thanks. I just crap myself. Thanks. Let me make sure the smell goes away before I continue my journey. So, I mean, it was just crazy stuff, guys. But, man, we're down to a minute. I mean, we are riding this baby out tonight. I mean, I think we need to move up to 3 hours. This is what I'm thinking. Because we just talk, and it's all good. We're having a good time, drinking beer, talking to everybody.
We could have been commentating for the football.
I know. Telling them stories. It was insane. But seriously, guys, Waverly Hills was awesome. And I was on this kick to talk about it tonight because a lot of people don't get to hear me talk about it. and Death Tunnel. We were watching it this week. I was reviewing it on G&B, talking about, you know, the Booth brothers convincing me that they're good filmmakers, which, guys, you rock. I can't wait to see your stuff. Good stuff. But I don't know. I'm out of time. I'm not allowed to talk anymore. My producers will kill me. And I, of course, this is Gigi. I could go on for hours. I got so much to say. It's kind of a mellow night tonight, guys. We're doing Waverly Hills. Next week, we have an awesome show lined up. We have Steven from Chaos, the movie Chaos, on. So we're going to take a little dip into the horror pool. We might be drunk and high while we do it. Who knows? Who knows here at the Gigi Studios, as long as it's not Ghostbusters 3. But from our crypt to yours, good night.